Let's hope we've gotten that out of our system.
It's always good to have a little bit of I would call this like dumping RAM, and I don't know if that translates really well into English. But I do mean it in the sense of, like, you know how computers, like, whenever, like, obviously from short-term memory to long-term memory, like, you're, the RAM is being dumped. That is what we just did for, like, 20 minutes before we started recording.
I guess I would call it, like, a warm-up is the same way.
Sounds better than RAM dumping.
No, RAM dumping. RAM dumping fits more with technology. The point where we go, right, now we need to put our podcasting hat on. On that note, welcome to the Wandering Tech Podcast, episode 21. Hello. I'm Paul.
Hey! And I'm Lydia. Thank you so much for joining us.
We did it. Episode 21. The magic number.
Yeah.
The magic number.
Do you feel magical?
I do feel magical. Well, look, I'm talking to you. It always feels magical.
Oh, look at that. What a compliment. Shall we do something even more magical by reliving a really exciting day for me of DemoFest? We're going to try to cram everything in this one episode as a follow-up and as a way for me to sort of relay to Paul everything that happened in DemoFest London 2024. Paul, I'm expecting that you have notes and questions and thoughts that you want to go through.
Yep.
There's obviously, like, already things have been posted on LinkedIn, on social media. Folks have spoken about what their topics were. There's a lot of things being shared already, which I'm pretty sure you've clocked quite a lot of that. But we haven't had the chance, and completely purposefully, we haven't spoken too much about DemoFest because I wanted to obviously relay it in the most complete way possible to Paul and to you, dear listener, as well.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought was Slovenia is a lovely country with some amazing view. But I was sad.
And just for reference and for folks listening, Paul was sending me throughout the entire time what I can only describe is pictures from a fairy tale land. I haven't been to Slovenia and I'm long overdue. But at the same time, it was just like I would look out the window and see grey London, and then Paul would send me a picture of a lake with a castle in the background reflecting into the water with either beautiful crispy sunshine and or dramatic clouds covering it. And it's just, it was so incredibly unfair. Speaking of, like, FOMO, like, I definitely felt FOMO looking at your photos. But at the same time, I turned around and had amazing conversations at DemoFest. So, you know,
yeah,
it's fine.
I get it.
It equals out.
It does. And I was, as I say, I was just trying to make myself feel better. But
you did get a couple of swear words your way.
I'm sure. I heard that was the case. I heard the case. But yeah,
yep.
DemoFest, it looked great again. It did look really, really good. And I think what I was taken by and struck by was actually how much it scaled up since last year, even since last year. And for context, last year was my first year going, but wow. Like, it leveled up again this year.
Yeah. They did share the numbers. It felt, but it's one thing to hear that it has like 200, 300, 400, 600 people attending. It's a different thing when you're actually there and you can tell the difference between last year and this year. Because also it was in the same venue, which was quite helpful for that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because last year it felt like if you consider like the big room that everything was in, like in the beginning, like the keynotes and everything else, which was the same like as this year, the room felt bigger and fuller. So there's definitely, and also just from meandering and talking to people, a lot of first timers.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a lot of folks there that this was their first time. And obviously all of the feedback was, oh my gosh, I had no idea that there's so many other pre-sales people ever. And I think that's one of the big things about, like, if you're ever on the fence about joining, just seeing a it's not even a room anymore. It's like a whole entourage of rooms and like the big meeting space in the middle and everything else. Just seeing the crowd of people there that are as excited as you about the profession. That is definitely something special. But taking you through chronologically, so obviously, same as last year, same as every year. DemoFest is obviously hosted by Consensus, so it's usually their turn right at the beginning to obviously do the keynote, you know, set the tone for today. And I think same as last year, same as every other year I've been, they are very good at this, right? So this was the first year that Doug, the new CEO, actually spoke. The tone was set really quickly from that point. It's about, like, you know, we are moving forward. There is a new stage, as it is every year. But I'll To be honest with you, Paul, I don't have such a, even as we were going through the post from last year and trying mm-hmm. to figure, I don't remember it being such a stark, this is where we were before and this is where we, last year felt more like we are reconfirming what we are and what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this year is like, okay, so now we've done that mm-hmm. for the last year. Mm-hmm. Now we're going up a level. Now we're shifting things again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're moving the goalposts even further on, which is a good thing because then it pushes the profession going forward. And I do truly believe that, you know, Consensus as a, at the end of the day, they are a software provider. They are a tool provider for pre-sales. Because of DemoFest, because of the I wouldn't say fans, I would say the practitioners around them are so motivated to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
They do have the ability to actually push forward a lot of these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as I said, Doug started off really well, and then Todd Jensen and Adam Freeman, as they came in, now part of Consensus, which is from last time, this is now a change.
Mm-hmm.
They also did a fantastic keynote of just, again, resetting and stating what the keyword is, which I'm a little bit on the fence, and I would love to hear what your opinion is on the matter. The keyword that I noted down, because they kept on repeating it, obviously that was the thing that they were trying to get across, which is pre-sales genius. Consensus' whole goal, as far as I understood, is to elevate that pre-sales genius that is in every company and be able to share it further than just the pre-sales team.
Okay.
How does that sound to you as a pitch?
Initially, I'm like a little bit, I see the intention, but being quite honest, and I think this is a topic that probably deserves a wider discussion, is the tendency to perhaps overstate our own importance. And if we're saying,
I'm really happy you said that,
pre-sales genius, it's like you're assuming that you are somehow the secret sauce to just completely overhauling the entire sales. Now, can pre-sales have a bigger impact? Sure, I'm sure there is scope. There is always scope, and it's something that I'm going through right now, which is looking at the effectiveness of my team and of the wider pre-sales organization. But it's very presumptive to say, to use that word in particular. Yeah.
I was thinking the exact same thing, and I do wonder if that is a UK thing.
Yeah.
Because we do have to consider, like, obviously consider an American company, Doug is, you know, from America. And I think a lot of the terminology and a lot of these phrases
mm-hmm.
struck us in a different way. I don't feel like a genius. I've never felt like a genius in any form, shape or form, especially within as a field SE. But I think it is moving towards, and if we sort of like take our cynical UK hats off for a second, and we just displace the word genius with capabilities,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we do, one thing we do have as pre-sales is a unique set of skills within an organization, right? And you can make the argument that that is true for obviously like our sales counterparts, for, you know, folks in marketing, for customer success folks. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. But this is a pre-sales event, so it only makes sense for there to be, you know, when we are focusing on what is our unique viewpoint and our unique skill set that we should then do more with. And I think if it was phrased in that sort of way, it would sit better with us,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't be as punchy.
No, but I think you can still talk about, and the way I always pitch, okay, the concept of consensus and the wider thing of demo automation is, I go, it is about being able to scale the impact of your pre-sales team without needing to add head. Because if we think about even 5 years ago, how when I was in the field starting as a field SE, the only way to scale my impact would have been to like have more people doing what I was doing, which is fine to a degree, but it is not sustainable for companies to do. They can't just keep hiring and hiring. I think candidly, we've kind of seen the fallout of that. Saw this mass hiring in 2020, 2021, 2022, and then there's been a huge reverse. Now, saying, but there's not, I don't think that you can't say you can scale, you can become more effective, you can become more efficient. But to your point, getting up in front of 300-400 pre-sales professionals and saying, oh yeah, we're going to help you be more efficient and effective, is not as punchy as going, pre-sales genius.
Yes.
So I think that's perhaps where
we feel the difference between, you know, this is the big corporate messaging that they had with
yes.
Doug stating this.
Yeah.
And then moving over to the UK-based folks
yeah.
who were then, you know, taking the keynote from that point on, then it became a lot more practical and a lot more applicable and a lot more resonating mm-hmm, across mm-hmm. the audience. I want to share with you some of the numbers because I think it's quite interesting. So from last year, and this was something I noted down on my nifty little drawn-out visual notes,
yeah, indeed.
Is that from last year, they were stating the number that 72% of the buyer journey is asynchronous.
Mm-hmm.
This year, it's changed to 83%, which means two things. One, yeah. either people are becoming, you know, when I say people, I mean the buyers are becoming even more and more expecting of this sort of ability to do asynchronous research, asynchronous buying,
mm-hmm.
and or, and I'm saying and or, because I think these both two things are actually connected and are moving in tandem, a lot more technology companies are actually providing an asynchronous option,
yeah,
where you don't need to wait for a person to come and do a demo for you. You don't need to wait for a salesperson to talk to you. You can make a huge amount of the decision before you even talk to someone. So that number is growing, and growing quite significantly if you consider that's 11% difference.
Yeah, which is intriguing because when I think back to the stats that I'd seen, I'd always had the kind of 83% as the sort of benchmark in my mind, right? That, and I think this is going back a few years now, it was Gartner who did some analysis that was the way I'd always seen it presented was that 17% of the time in a buying cycle is spent engaged with vendors. And when you divide that by the average of 3 to 5 vendors, you're looking 3 to 4% of the time. And then you exponentiate up how much time you as a vendor are spending with a prospect. If they're doing that like 3 to 4 times with the other vendor, and then you start to realize, okay, there is a huge burden. So that's interesting that that's how those numbers have been presented, because I think there is this way of talking about it has definitely changed, which is that we went from saying small number, 17% of the time spent with vendors, to going 83% of the buying process is asynchronous. And then that a lot of that, you know, 70% of the decision has been made by the time you engage with vendors. So I think there's an interesting sort of way to look at that. And I think it's a different way of looking at it, right? To go, oh, you only spend this amount of time with vendors, to actually go to, hang on, there's a huge amount of time, significant majority, which is not spent with, and coming back to the thing about, you know, pre-sales genius, we as vendors have a tendency to over-egg our own things.
I think people don't like to think that they're a small number. I think you're spot on with the whole like shifting the priority a little bit on the other side. Where if you had told me that, you know, when I was starting at VMware, that as a field SC you only get like 3% of your, you know, potential prospects' time,
mm-hmm.
that wouldn't spur me to action. If anything, that would make me feel demotivated.
Yeah.
Because like I'm spending all of this time and all of this effort of becoming a good, you know, presenter, someone that, you know, a good trusted advisor, someone that, you know, I want customers to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they'll only give me 3 or 4% of their time.
Yeah.
That's incredibly demotivating. Whilst when you switch it around, you say, but actually 83% of their time is asynchronous. Whilst it's hard to then divvy up that between the different vendors, if we say like on average like 3 to 4, it's not going to be as exact at that point. But to consider that you now can actually contribute back to that bigger number and make a bigger impact,
mm-hmm.
that sounds a lot more attractive to me as a field SC saying like, oh, actually, let me do the more things to like gain some of that percentage into like conversations with me indirectly, asynchronously.
Yeah.
But let me do some more of that.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's a really smart take of them actually switching it around like that. And I found it really interesting that you clocked that, because I like that number. That's why I wrote it down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I didn't quite understand why I liked that number. And it's because, like, again, at the end of the day, we're simple creatures. We like big numbers. But again, it sort of highlights that we can suddenly, from being, oh, you're just an insignificant percentage of a buyer's time, suddenly it's like, oh, what can I do now to claw back more of that, and or do, you know, can I overtake like that 80%? Can I be in front of my prospects the entire time that they're doing asynchronous research?
So if I look down the kind of the title of the presentation, I was interested to see, there's sort of two things I took away. One was that there was a lot of talk, and I would say it's significantly more than last year. There were more presentations that had the word demo in, which is a kind of a fairly high level observation, but there was this kind of a focus on the fundamental on one side, and then the other side was very much a here is our it's more talking about the shift in the kind of the overall shift in the role. And I think it's this thing that it's continually evolving, and we've talked before on and off air about this transformation, kind of remorphing that's happening within this function. And without wanting to kind of get too in the weeds of what should we call ourselves, which is maybe the second favorite topic for people in the pre-sales bubble to talk about. I don't know, maybe discoveries first, then that one. It tends to seem to swap between the two. But I think that was my kind of takeaway, right? It was we have, on the one side, you have this, we need to revisit and think about the fundamentals and think about how we're doing things at a basic level. And on the other side, we need to think about where we are even sitting in the organization and how we're even engaging, which is coming off the back of this idea that 8 done asynchronously. Anyway, next topic.
After the keynote and after obviously everyone being together, the I would say the most negative thing about DemoFest is that obviously there are three sessions happening on at the same time. And I always feel so bad that I can't be in all of them because I want to hear all of them. Mm. But you have to, because obviously none of them are recorded. It's like, it's all, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, if you're there, that's, you know, you get the value. So please join us. Otherwise, big FOMO. Even when you're there, you still get big FOMO. That you don't get to see all the sessions. So immediately after the keynote, we had, I'll go through the titles. So Forever Buying, the Role of Pre-Sales in a Customer Success, which again, I think it's really nice to see that, again, since last year, they're still talking about customer success. Mm. Because we need to make sure that we're not in this little pre-sales bubble entirely. With the whole idea of if we do want to break down silos, if we do want to work with other people within the organization, we mm-hmm. also need to hear from them. Mm-hmm. So amazing that we did have someone from customer success talking to, you know, folks there. I unfortunately couldn't make that one. I joined Nick Hill for his From Rejection to Adoption, a Change Management Guide to Demo Automation, which is, to me, like the reason I picked that one is, one, Nico is a friend of the podcast, and I wanted to see him present. And also, more importantly, I wanted to see what are the challenges that people face when they are trying to implement demo automation for my own purely selfish purposes mm-hmm. of learning how to then help folks do that. And then the third session of the day is People Sell to People, Understanding the Person Behind the Procurement. I am so annoyed that I couldn't make this one. If mm-hmm. if you were there, I would have asked like for us to tag team like these two. Once again, I think it's really important to like talk to customer success folks. I just don't know if that on that day I had the brain space and the bandwidth to actually listen to that one. But Nick Hill, you know, amazing presenter, really well done presentation. The one thing that I took from that session is, and I loved it, which is do the wild thing. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of amazing takes from that session, and I highly encourage folks, if they, you know, if please check the slides themselves, reach out to Nick Hill, but also have a look at my visual notes. That is the one that I've sort of like, if I don't look at any notes or don't look at anything, you just tell me like, what did you get from Nick Hill session? Mm-hmm. The one thing is do crazy things, mm-hmm. do wild things, do things outside of the box. To get different success and something, because this is uncharted territory. Mm-hmm. We've never done these things before. So I really love that little bit of permission that I felt from Nico to say, yeah, let's do weird things. Let's do things that are outside of the box. Ask questions that are atypical for what we're doing. And the three questions I noted down, which I really loved, was what would you do if you only had 1 hour a week to do demos? As a pre-sales person, if you only had allocated an hour to demo in front of customers, what would you do with the rest of your time to move the needle forward, to do something different, to still create that impact that you want to do within the organization? Or even better, what would you do if you could demo, like you couldn't demo at all? Mm. You just weren't allowed. Yeah. But, you know, imaginary scenario, but you just couldn't demo. What would you then do to still create that impact, to still drive deals in, to still make sure that they close? And I love that idea because it really pushes you to think about the role in a completely different way. Outside of just, oh, we're just there to do a demo.
Yeah, I love it. And I think someone asked me recently, like, what's the biggest challenge that my team face? And I said, it's not being able to get above the noise of the day-to-day. And I think it's a really interesting exercise to go, well, if you couldn't do this thing, which is kind of very, it's at the kind of core of our identity, right? It's like, that's what I do. That if someone says, you know, oh, so what does that involve? You say what your job is. So what does that involve? I do demos. Like, that's just the instinctive answer is I deliver software. And it's interesting actually for me as, you know, the last sort of year as a leader, like, I don't know, the last did a demo, right? I don't do that anymore. So this is a very kind of pertinent thing in my head, which is kind of going, well, what should I be doing? And I think it's quite revealing because as a profession, we have a tendency to complain and to say, we should do this, or we couldn't do this, or we can't do that, and we can't do that. But actually, you know, when you suddenly get given that freedom, you're then like, oh, hang on, I'm a bit lost now. So I think it's a really good thing to think about and to go, well, actually, how would you do it? And even as an exercise, and it's not saying that tomorrow you're not going to have to do demos anymore, because, okay, fine. But enterprise selling is not about doing demos. It's not about, and I think that the the one that I would have joined, which is the People Sell to People. It is about going and connecting with, on a human level, what is going to impact these people, and looking at it, as you say, big picture, not just, oh, I do demos and I can get my demos better and I can do more value in my demos, maybe make my demos a bit better. It's like, no, because that's not going to be the thing. That's the equivalent of faster horses, right, rather than cars. Yeah. Saying, oh, do better demos, okay, but that,
or do more demos,
or do more demos, or my demos will be better. Okay, how will you improve? I think focusing on the thing that we do today, doing more of it better, is not what's going to change or have a significant impact on the success.
I love that you picked my favorite analogy, which is
if people ask me what they wanted, they'd have said faster horse.
Yeah, I love that, because genuinely, that absolutely suddenly clarified exactly what my thought was around this. Why did I like it so much? Because you're taking away the horses.
Yeah.
In this scenario, if you ask a pre-sales person, what would you do differently if you had no demos? That is literally asking people, what would you do if you had no horses? Mm-hmm. You'd make a car.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is incredible. Like, I love that so much. I want to give enough time for the rest of the sessions as well, because I'm pretty sure, like, just on this topic, we can talk for days. And the best thing about DemoFest, I think, and I'm so happy that, you know, I was there and I was able to take notes, because this is now going to be all of our topic sessions for the next 12 months. Yeah. Until next DemoFest.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
It just created all of the show notes. It's amazing.
Yeah.
We don't have to do any more work on show notes unless something dramatic happens in the pre-sales world. But yeah, so if I can take it on to the next session, which is, so the three ones that I had the very difficult choice of making, which was to go listen to Tom Edwards, who is an amazing speaker, Beyond Pre-Sales, Maximizing Cross-Functional GTM Efficiency. I couldn't make that one, but again, to the topic of, you know, cross-pollinating, removing silos as much as possible within an organization. And it's just, I'm so annoyed that I couldn't make it. And then a personal favorite of mine, because I absolutely adore David, the five love languages of sales and pre-sales. If folks haven't had the chance to see David actually speak, or like seen what he has to do, his company, even just the name of his company, Let the Geek Speak, he is not entirely pre-sales, which makes his takes and his approach incredibly approachable, and I love what he does. So if you ever get the chance, please go see David. I decided to give a chance someone that I wasn't familiar with, and a topic that maybe is a little bit less popular within the pre-sale space, which is content that converts, driving growth through the funnel. And it was by a lady called Bian, and she spoke about how to create content that actually matters. So to the conversation we were just having around, okay, how do I claw back more of that 83% of asynchronous communication? She laid out a very clear plan of what is the pieces of content that you personally can do, mm-hmm. and as an organization, obviously, if you know, for the leaders in the group. But I was looking at it as an individual contributor. What can I do differently? Or what is my plan of action to get myself more in front of my potential prospects? One thing that she said very much from the get-go, which is B2B is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, especially when we're talking about numbers and we're talking about, you know, how we approach this and everything else, we tend to be quite, because we're all techies, right? We're all engineers at heart. We want there to be a very specific machine that we can just insert coins in and result comes out. That doesn't happen. It's humans, and it is always going to be messy, and it's always going to be, you know, we need to consider there's people on the other side that whatever we're doing. And she nailed that really well, and it really stuck with me. Because a quote taken from her talk is, content marketing talks with, not to, people. Mm. So who are you talking with? Whenever you are conversing, like, for example, like you and I, Paul, are now talking, my brain is switched on to a completely different way to what I then see from people's marketing spiels.
Yeah.
That one feels like I'm being talked at.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. It's a completely different thing with a conversation and when it's messaging,
mm-hmm.
in the most, you know, mm-hmm. grandiose way. So I love that she was able to sort of like pull it back down and say like, no. The most effective marketing that you know, from in her experience is talking with people. And I just want to take you through, and again, for folks that, you know, are able to actually have a look, please don't do that whilst you're driving or anything else. In the actual graphical notes, I did actually write down the plan that she illustrated. And I think her slides are also available, but it's really just, what is the pieces of content to get you in front of people? And I'll just highlight a couple of them, which is one, the very first thing that you need to be working on having, which is awareness. who are you as a person, right? Because before, what do we do, Paul, when we're having a conversation? Hi, my name is Lydia. Right? So you introduce yourself, you let people know who you are before you actually start having a conversation. And in her plan, that is a 15-second video. And by the way, that was something that I found a little bit difficult because I'm definitely more of a text person versus a video person when it comes to both content creation and consumption.
Mm-hmm.
But the numbers that she brought out is that 64% of people prefer video to text when it comes to learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, if I want people to learn from me, then and to hit that preference, I need to be making mostly videos to text, not only videos, but mm-hmm. mostly videos. And I was like, oh, okay, I need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so first step is who you are, introduce yourself, awareness, short video, just to get your name, your face, your voice out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one I really enjoyed, which is just that's why I wrote it down, the numbers, right? How long should this content be? So when she was talking about a pitch, what can I do? What can the product do? She said 2 minutes. Product video.
So I like that thing of 15 seconds. So I am probably more of a text person like you in terms of how I consume content, but I also see how video, I can see why video is so compelling because A, you can take in a lot of information, quite literally, visually, but also you can just listen to it. Right. If it's a spoken video, you're very easy. Oh, I can just listen and you kind of take in. So the thing about, you know, the picture speaks 1,000 words is very true because you can take, you know, that kind of information. You can take a lot more information in very quickly. Text is great for like deep learning, I would say. If you want to get in and drill into a topic, that's what text is for. But I think that with video, it's a very different. It's a very different thing. You're going, oh, right, okay, I'm presenting this in a very different way, which is designed to just like, it's again, also, right, it's unfortunately why the primary way that people now consume content on social media is not reading short form text, it's watching short form video. And I think that absolutely plays into this as well. So I think there's two sides to it, but I think that's also one which is like, I now have, you know, I'm used to consuming video in my day to day, and I think that is absolutely a part of how, you know, the way that people consume content in their personal lives significantly impacts how they consume content in their professional lives as well. And this has been my thing for some time, which is you have to look at it in a context of going, yes, business and B2B, B2C are two different things, but people are not two different. You don't suddenly walk into, and anyone who's watched the Apple TV Plus show Severance, with that exception, you don't literally walk into work and become a different person. You are the same person at work and at home, and your instincts are the same, your habits are the same, and your preferences for consuming information.
Yeah, no, a very practical, very applicable session. I really enjoyed it and I have a lot of notes and I'm going to be implementing, I would say, to be honest with you, alongside with Nikhil's like wild idea. I think that session was the one that I had the most practical steps I wanted to take from, and I don't mean that as an insult to obviously for the rest of the speakers, but just with everything else I was very fully on board already.
Yes.
So these ones were the ones where I was like, oh, okay, that's really, yeah, that's spot on. I need to do more of this. So without further ado, I'm gonna move on because I've already like this should have been like a two-part episode, but here we are because I just wanted to give enough space for everyone. So then afterwards, there was boost your credibility with strategic social presence from a gentleman from LinkedIn. Then we had Max, the pre-sales rockstar, joining us from Germany. Bad and better demo sessions for more meaningful conversations. And then we had 0 to 1,000 in 3 months, Mimecast's journey to a successful consensus program, a consensus case studies and demo. I heard amazing things from the case study for consensus. The only reason I didn't join that one is because I do tend to see quite a lot of consensus content already and their use cases and their case studies. So whilst I imagine, and I heard actually throughout the conversation, it was a really good and engaging session. Obviously, I had to pick Max because I've never seen Max present. I know Max obviously from social media and I see his posts all the time. And it was exactly, if you're following Max on social media, you're getting a condensed version of that in a room. The room was filled to the brim. There was a lot of engagement. There was a lot of jokes. There was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of energy in that room. So he's absolutely great. And I love nothing more. I would say my second favorite type of humor after the dry British humor is the dry German humor. And I found myself cackling to myself quietly more often than not throughout the entire session. So absolutely spot on. And please have a look through. Max recently did share his, if you're not following him on LinkedIn, absolutely share, you know, follow him on LinkedIn. He did share his slides. And there is a myriad of jokes and really actually like impactful things that if you are not fully on board, and to my point that, you know, everything Max said, I was like, yep, just not nodding away the entire time, like, yep, buddy, like, you and me, same wavelength, right? Absolutely agree with you. And there's a lot of things that we speak about on the podcast anyway, like through and through. So unless you have any questions or comments, Paul, I'm gonna
move right along. That's fine. Move right along.
Yeah. The next one I then joined is obviously, again, friend of the podcast and friend of mine, Natasha. Demo coach for 2 decades now, as you expect, so much value from that session. It was really interesting to see her in person because I've never actually seen her present in person before. So the big take I got from that one, and again, it's a very visual one, which is she drew out on her slides like this big meandering journey, which was representing the Harbor Tour, right? The evil Harbor Tour that obviously we all are plagued with. And it's just like this big windy thing that takes an hour to go through. And as she was talking about how do we approach demo automation, her take is if that sort of demo is acceptable in a live demo because there is some level of interaction, people can stop and ask you questions even though they rarely do. When it comes to a video, like I would never watch a 45-minute demo, uncut, uncatered to me. Yet, from her experience as a consultant, as a coach, that is what people are doing. They're just taking their Harbor tool, like their golden demo, and shoving it onto something like Consensus, and then they don't see the results. It's like, yeah, of course not. So Natasha's like biggest take and biggest tip was cut it down to use cases, to functions, to things that matter to your customers, less so about you just showing everything and anything that you love and adore about your product. She also had a really good analogy, and it really stuck with me, which is, would you watch, Paul, a 7-hour movie that is an action, comedy, drama, historical, romance, thriller, and documentary in 7 hours? I know I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm gonna caveat. Yeah, and I'm weird, so I might, but no, the average person would.
I challenge you to find something like that and actually do it.
Oh, that's
you might think you would enjoy it.
Yeah, there's definitely been, I think what was the one, there was definitely, I have sat through some, I think the longest film I sat through without sort of, you know, start to finish, excluding The Lord of the Rings, because that's a different category, it was about 4 hours, 45 minutes, so just shy of 5 hours, and it was an action, comedy, rom, drama, horror, I cannot remember what it's called, but, and it was also in like 3 different languages, none of them which were English.
Right. But also, you don't remember even the title.
No,
so to Natasha's point,
you don't. Yes,
nobody will remember. Yeah, you will not be memorable. You will not be. You will not have that effect that you wanted to have.
Yeah.
If you just use your golden demo, so it's all like, and again, it was quite visual. So like again, imagine like going to a cinema, and that's all you have. You have this 1 7-hour movie. All of the posters are the same for that same movie. But the reality of the world is actually no. You have 10 options, depending on the type of person you are, depending on the type of movie you enjoy, and going to the cinema, you have the options to pick and choose. So if you are looking at demo automation, think movie theater. Don't think golden demo. Cut it up, pick the things that are going to be applicable to people.
Yeah. I'm sat here shocked that people just have taken that approach. Genuinely. Like, it's just, yeah.
The people do that because they don't know, they don't know any better. Right, they know what's their most valuable thing, they perceive their most valuable thing, which is this golden demo, because everyone knows it, right? I don't know about you, but like when I first joined VMware, like that was exactly what I was taught to do. Learn the golden demo, learn the 101, and be able to present that to customers. So obviously, when you are chronologically working through a new way of presenting to people, you'll go back to your basics. You'll go back to, how did I start? And we started with a golden demo.
Yeah.
But that's not its purpose. And I'm not saying a golden demo is a bad thing, especially when it comes to like enabling folks. I think the golden demo is really important because it gives you practically all of the tools in your tool belt to be able to have a conversation. But then you need to use that as a shelf, right? Like I visualize it as a shelf of like different bottles of tinctures of like in an alchemy lab, right? Like now you've learned how to make like all of the bottles and all of the potions in front of you. But whenever you're having a conversation with a person, you will never just shove everything into one big cauldron and just give it to them.
No.
Like, no, we will pick and choose whichever one they actually need, mix it all together in a different new way, and then present it back to them.
Yeah.
A lot of these analogies are quite visual, so and I really think that's why I keep on trying to like present even more, because like one of them will stick to people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's nothing wrong with the golden demo. It's very necessary. But I had a very similar, or I'm still having like a very similar like thought process when it comes to like enabling people in the networking space. Like, we've all been taught networking starting with the OSI model. Nobody cares about the OSI model. For folks that are not familiar, it's very boring. It's a necessary tool.
Yeah.
But I don't think just because we were taught that way, that is the best way to teach people this technology.
Mm.
And I think it's a very similar bias happening here as well, where it's like, oh, well, I started with a golden demo. So obviously when we're moving to a new platform and a new way to present, we'll start with a golden demo. Ta-da! That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
but it's not actually effective.
No, it's not. It's not. It's the and you know, we'll move on in a sec, but it's the analogy that I would pick is how to make a cake. Here, the golden demo approach, right? Put your golden demo in a demo automation is equivalent of going of like giving a, of giving someone going, here's the cake we're gonna make. How do you make the cake? You put all the ingredients in the bowl, then you make the cake, and the cake is, and you mix the ingredients together, put it in the oven, cake is made. Like, there's no steps, there's no order to doing that. You're just going, yeah, just do this. Or you're making someone sit through the race of going, how do you bake a cake? First thing you do, you get a bowl, then get it just completely undermines the whole point if you do that. And I, again, maybe I am naive to visit, but it undermines the objective of demo automation. And I feel the same way about people that go, oh yeah, great, I'll record demos, but what I'm going to do is set up a call and show them the demo. And I'm like, but topic for another, we have more sessions.
The demo fest has completely like solved our like, topics for like this 20 episodes. It's amazing. The last breakout session that I joined was obviously the Women in Tech one. A lot of lovely conversations. It was actually quite nice to see so many, you know, women within like demo fest. It's almost like a running joke nowadays. It's like, you know, oh yeah, you know, how many hands do you have? Like, that's about how many, you know, women are going to be at the event. but it's definitely getting better with each year, and it was lovely that, you know, that we did have the space to actually have conversations on various different topics. And it's lovely what the ladies are doing there around, like, the, you know, the women in solution consulting are setting up a group, and things are moving forward with that, and I'm just excited to see what they're going to be able to do. The other two sessions, obviously I don't want to make people feel like they're not being called out. The other sessions were Anatomy of a Lost Deal by Malcolm Murphy. Amazing speaker as well. I was very, very FOMO-ish the entire time, because then I called Malcolm afterwards and I'm like, oh buddy, like, I want to see your session so much. but hopefully he'll be around next year as well, and we'll get to speak to him again. And then there is the Demo is No Longer an Event, Expanding Presales Touchpoints to Deliver Exceptional Products Experience Across the Buyer Journey, from the folks from 2Win, who are a partner of Consensus as well. Our personal favorite, Mark McKinley, was there speaking. And again, I couldn't make that one, but I would have loved to hear a little bit of Scottish accents in my life. But that is life. That is the reality of the world. And obviously, then we had the wrap up from Consensus's point of view with Mike, the CPTO, coming up. That was actually, that would have said that out loud. That almost sounded like a Star Wars character. Sorry, Mike. but it was really, so first of all, like, it was also the first time I got to see Brian from Reach Suite.
Yeah.
So, and getting to actually see Reach Suite in person. And I think this is better left for a completely different topic,
mm-hmm.
for a completely different episode, talking about products within the demo automation space.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what Consensus and now together with Reach Suite are going to be doing going forward really cements their approach and what they're trying to do with their messaging in the beginning, and then really well wrapped up with, and this is what the product actually looks like,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm very excited to see. And also, fair play to Brian, a live demo in front of a room full of pre-sales people. Whoa, I was feeling for the guy. that was a stressful event. And then at the end, I cannot emphasize this enough. Rue was absolutely stunning as a presenter, and to have like that whole day of sessions and people speaking at you, and it's a lot of information to take in, right?
Mm-hmm,
and then also,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, networking in between that and having different conversations. Rue was so good at just bringing everyone's energy back up and just getting people excited and getting people like to talk about things. And he is such a good presenter. Like, oh my lord. I think the magic is lost, like, over screen, because this is the first time I've seen Rue present in person. And, like, I wished you were there, Paul, because there was so much energy from that man of how, and again, just, like, and you and I spoke about, because I couldn't help but, like, talk to you about this. Yeah. Rue is so good at being such a humble presenter of, like, he didn't start with, like, this is who I am, these are my accomplishments. Like, he does a really cool trick that I highly encourage people do this, if you're okay with that. But, like, he showed a picture of him, of a younger him, looking quite nerdy. And that just completely, like, every single time he does that, I know why he does that. It just completely humanizes him. It's like, yeah, I used to be dorky, and now I'm doing this, and I'm helping people, and I had these successes, and this is how I did it.
Yeah.
And it's just such a good, like, if you're ever presenting, if you're ever worried about, because I worry about this, I don't want to sound and come off as, oh, I am so great. Like, again, this is the living in the UK long enough has done this to me. It's like, oh, I don't want to come off as, like, showing off or, like, bigging myself up. It is important to humanize and to connect with the folks in the audience in one way or another.
Yeah.
By bringing your authentic self, like, bringing who you really are.
Yeah.
Maybe not the person you're on stage.
Yeah.
But just so showing, like, a little bit of a glimpse of actually, like, hey, I'm this guy.
Yes.
I'm this nerdy.
This is what I do.
But it was just, and again, he was just so good at, like, he got us up, he got us, like, you know, separated into groups, he got us, like, talking and, like, engaging with him. And it was just a masterclass in how to, at a 4 p.m. like, slot, he was able to just bring everyone back to speed. And it was incredible. Like, genuinely, I was like, he is my hero when it comes to presenting. He is just so good at, like, at doing this stuff.
Yeah.
We need more of Rue. Rue needs to come over to Europe.
He does. He does.
He lost on the US.
Yeah.
Come over, Rue.
Just come over.
We like you. We like you better.
Wow. That was a achievement. As you say.
I can breathe now.
You can. Thank you. I obviously had FOMO. Like, and I think it's worth saying the biggest part of my FOMO was not getting to see people. And I would say all of these are really interesting topics, and I think it's interesting how the conversation has moved on, but also I think has kind of niched down compared to last year. Like, last year we saw, and we talked about it in the last episode, right? We saw a very broad spectrum of topics, from thing, you know, from your, you know, presentation on kind of bringing empathy, to Adam talking about extreme ownership, to, you know, Don being Don, right? And talking about how to communicate. I think it's interesting how there is those topics, there is that thread that I think has been pulled through from last year, and I think will continue to be. But at the same time, I think we are also seeing a niching down. And I come back to the thing that, yeah, there is talk about demos and a bit more of an analytical kind of take. And again, it's hard to, not having not seen the sessions, we can't go, this is exactly what happened in them. But when I just kind of look at the kind of the themes and the way that people were discussing it, that I just think is a really interesting kind of methodology and a really interesting way to kind of dive into these topics. So there's, as you say, we have a year's worth of content here. There'll be much more discussion over the next 12 months. And I am going to make every effort that I possibly can to be at DemoFest 2025, because this looked like a great event. I'm sure it was. And I do still have fun.
Let's make it happen next year, Paul.
Let's make it happen.
And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Wandering Tech Podcast, even though it felt a little bit like a monologue instead of just a podcast. But I just genuinely wanted to put everything out there. But we really appreciate you for listening. You can find more about what we do at solutionspathfinders.com. You can find more about what me and Paul are up to on our social media links, mostly LinkedIn. And you can find me as Lydia Vasileva, and you can find Paul as Paul Harris. Links, as always, in the show notes, alongside with all of the folks that we mentioned today, links to the slides that were shared, and many more content to come. So thank you so much for listening. And if you do like what you're hearing, please leave us a review at your preferred podcasting platform of choice. It really does make a difference. Thank you.